I know the brochures all told that there will be two speakers, namely Kevin, my colleague, and I. But unfortunately, Kevin has a medical condition and he's at rest in his bed. So I will try and give his part as well, which covers RIA services and the Silverlight stuff. This is basically, because in our title we had the quote, "Shaken, not stirred," from James Bond, so this will be the only reference to James Bond, the moving spot. Afterwards, I won't do anything like that again. Okay, so Silverlight, Windows Phone 7, Windows Azure, jQuery, OData, RIA services, and actually there's also MVC, NuGet, MEF, and way too much to put on one title slide. And I will try to cover all of those things in 1 hour. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Maarten Baljouw. I'm from Antwerp, so it's actually pretty nice to speak at this venue because I can get here in like 7 minutes. I work for Real Dolmen, and we also developed the live feedback application that you will be seeing throughout the event, but that's the only time I'm going to make that reference again because we had enough commercials, I guess. I'm the co-founder of the Azure User Group here in Belgium, so if you're interested in Azure, I have a session on that on Thursday, and feel free to come join our sessions of the Azure. My focus is mainly on web, so ASP.NET, ASP.NET MVC, PHP, Windows Azure, jQuery, all the stuff really related to web development. I blog about those topics on my blog, which you can see on the slides. And if you follow me on Twitter, usually you could see my coffee abuse on there, but lately with the weather it's my beer abuse, but you can follow that as well. And I also try to regularly post small links to everything that I'm really interested in regarding ASP.NET MVC and stuff like that. So the agenda for today. First of all, there's some issues with organizing an event like Tech Days, for example. There's also a problem if you want to build something for these issues, and I'm going to cover those. And afterwards, I will give you an overview of the solution we proposed for Tech Days and the technologies that we used. So you can see all the technologies from the title slides are on the agenda as well, but there's actually some more at MVC, jQuery, jQuery Mobile, etc. So organizing an event like Tech Days, usually after Tech Days, you get this email from the Tech Days organization asking you to vote, to give comments on sessions and speakers and the event in general. So it's really... my mouse is acting strange, so I'm not going to touch that anymore. So it's really difficult to get a feedback loop with all the attendees. So you want to get immediate feedback about your sessions, about your speakers, and about the event you're organizing. So, for example, if there's too few sandwiches, you want to know immediately. If the keynote is bad or it's really, really good, you want to know that immediately and not like 3 weeks after the event. So it's difficult to establish a feedback loop, and what you can do is use Twitter for it. Now, who's using Twitter? Just going to do, okay, a few. Which hashtag are you using for Tech Days? Is it Tech Days 11? I saw people in the Netherlands, where they also have Tech Days running now, also using this hashtag. So you're never sure that the feedback you're getting on Twitter is actually this event, maybe the Netherlands as well. Also, I saw a few people on Twitter using Tech Days BE, or Tech Days 2011, or Tech Days 11 BE. So it's really difficult to get all that information in one central place and really immediately see, well, anything you want to know about how the attendees and the speakers think of your event. So the earliest feedback that you can actually get is like 3 weeks after the event, which is way too late if you want to modify something during the event. So what we wanted to do was establishing a connection between speakers and attendees. We wanted to have a real short feedback loop where you could just log in on a mobile application or through a website, where you can answer some short and real to-the-point. So for example, how's the speaker? Rating 1 to 5. How's the session? Rating 1 to 5. And you can also give some optional free text input on the session and the speaker as well. There's also a method of providing general event feedback. So if you have comments about the sandwiches or coffee or whatever, you can also do that through the general remarks field. But you can do it immediately. monitoring this, and they are actually trying to get all that information from you. So use the application, use the website if you want. Also interesting, in the hallways and in the booth area below, we have a Twitter wall and a top sessions list where you can actually, well, get some sort of a competition between speakers. So all the speakers can try to raise their ratings and get really, really good ratings to come on that screen, and they can even compete about that. It's also interesting as an attendee, because you immediately see the speaker has a failing microphone, for example, or this speaker is pretty good. And I want to see more sessions about him that are given by this person. Also important is to not block people out. So there's a lot of devices. There's Androids, there's iPhones, there's Windows Phone 7, there's web, there's mobile web, there's you name it, device for it. And you want to support, well, all or most of these devices as well. So it's really difficult to do that immediately. So what we've built, and I'll give you a high-level overview of that, is we have a front-end containing a Windows 7 application, a general web front-end, so you can just browse to techdays.realdolmen.com and, well, with your browser and fill out session comments. But you can also use your iPhone, Android, or your Nokia and just comment on the sessions using your device. It's just a mobile web application, so it's not really an app that you would find in the marketplace, but you can use it, and it has the look and feel of a mobile application. Next, we have the large screens in the hallways, in the booth area below, the Twitter wall in the top sessions. And of course, we have a backend for the Tech Days organizers, where they can see not who has commented on something, but they can see the ratings, they can see the comments, they can see the feedback you are sending to the event organizers. Now, all of this is using all of this is using SQL Azure as the database backend. So all data that you submit is stored in SQL Azure. And of course, for the Twitter wall, we also have Twitter as a data source to retrieve data. Now, all of this is hosted on Windows Azure, so all the applications, be it the web applications or the services used internally by the mobile web applications, are hosted on Windows Azure, so they communicate through Windows Azure. Now, it's also difficult if you want to really connect all these applications and tightly couple them. So it's difficult to have one service model for the web application, maybe one for the Windows Phone 7 application, one for the backend, one for the Twitter wall. But we actually found one technology that was pretty interesting to quickly develop this application, because that was another requirement, but also to basically manage all the service calls between all these applications, and that's WCF RIA services. So we haven't been using plain WCF, we haven't been using REST calls, we're just using WCF RIA services between all applications to communicate either with SQL Azure or either with the Twitter wall using Twitter. So this three screens and a cloud vision of Microsoft is actually pretty nice, but there's a ton of screens. We have Windows Phone 7, we have any device with a web browser, so an iPhone, an iPad, an Android, whatever, a web browser, and we have the cloud. So you can build applications like this, like that philosophy that Microsoft offers, but there's actually much more than three screens, and all of them have a little bit of a different angle. First of all, rendering your mobile content, and if you want to create apps, it's really for each screen that you're developing an app. And it's also something we actually recommend. If you're building an iPhone app, make it an iPhone app, not just a clone of a Windows Phone 7 app, and vice versa. Okay, so the backend is hosted on WCF RIA services. And who knows WCF RIA services? Who has used it? Okay, and who has gone beyond the default generated data contexts? Okay, some. Basically, RIA services is pretty nice to use. First of all, it automates and simplifies creating a service boundary trust. So if you have an application sitting on a mobile device, for example, and you have your service layer hosted on a cloud, RIA services will basically establish the connection between both worlds and make sure that you can connect both worlds in a safe, service-oriented way, but also in a manner that it's easy to use. And what it does for that is It will basically generate client-side code for you based on your service, which you can then use in your Silverlight application or wherever you want to use it. So another, it leverages some common concerns. So for example, validation is something that always happens in every application, and typically you want to validate on your client side. Why? Because that's the fastest. You can just click a button and see that this field is required or the string length of that field is way too short. You want to know that immediately. And if you push that to a server first and then get a result back, it takes some milliseconds, but it doesn't feel instantaneously. So what you want to have is validation on client side. But of course, if you have validation only on client side, people will be smart and try to bypass the client side, have their own interface to your service, and will just try to without first validating it client side. So what you can do with RIA services is just write your validation logic once on the server side and then generate it so the validation logic is actually just doubled on the client side, but the validation exists on both sides. Also an interesting one is the authentication and authorization part in RIA services. You can just create an authentication service, plug it on top of your Active Directory membership database from ASP.NET or whatever store you want to use. But basically, you have one service where you authenticate your application and authorize your users. And this service is shared by all the RIA domain services that exist in your solution. And what's even more interesting is that you can just use this authentication logic from WCF RIA services to authenticate RIA services, but also to authenticate all the other WCF or ASMX web services that exist in your application. So it's really interesting to use it. Another interesting feature in there is the change tracking, for example. What you can have is a change set. So you get a set of data from the server. You start editing that on the client side, and one moment in time, you just push the save button. What will happen then is all the client side changes will be combined in a change set. So all the inserts, all the updates, all the deletes will be combined in a change set. This change set will then be copied to the server side, and the server side will just rebuild this change set and execute it on your database or whatever that's sitting behind your RIA services backend. So there's a couple of interesting features in RIA services that are fun to use. It's also, we found, building a WCF, just a regular service layer between boundaries, is pretty interesting if you're building a large application under a few time constraints, and you want to quickly build an application that has a service boundaries, and it has a Silverlight client, a web client, a Windows Phone client, stuff like that. RIA services is actually a pretty good choice because you can use it with your main application. So our main focus was building a Windows Phone 7 application, and then we had the web application and stuff like that. But in order to combine the Windows Phone 7 and the RIA services, this was our main Silverlight application, and this went really smooth using RIA services. And then your so-called byproducts, the web application, the backend, stuff like that, you can just use RIA services as well through a SOAP endpoint or through an OData endpoint. But it's still pretty easy to do, and you have one application where you have the service layer for free, basically. Also, if you want to share validation logic, it's pretty easy to just write it once in your RIA service and then reuse it either in ASP.NET MVC, either in Windows Phone 7, either in a Silverlight application, wherever you want. So one important thing about RIA services is that when you install the RIA services toolkit, you actually get a feature where you can expose your service as an SOAP endpoint or as an OData endpoint, which means your RIA service is just a regular WCF service that you're using in your application. It's also easy to reuse your service layer because of this. If you have an OData endpoint, you can just connect any application that talks XML and uses HTTP to connect to your RIA service and use the logic in there. Same goes with SOAP. Say you have a PHP client, for example, your service is written in WCF RIA services, you can reuse that from whichever client that you're wanting to use. So, and because RIA services is also built on WCF, it's just a service, and if you have the authentication service provided by RIA services, you can also use that one in your regular WCF services. So next, we also have our back office application for the TechDays organization, which is just basic administrative Silverlight application. And what we've done there is use WCF RIA services in its full extent. So just generating our domain service context from the database context, exporting it to a front end. So our front end was basically almost generated for the back end. And then we just had to add some support for reporting and charts and stuff like that. Now, what's interesting is if you use WCF RIA services, you can just get your service. If I stand here, the mic is better. You can just generate your service based on your context. So based on your database entities, you can generate your service. Once that's done, you can also add extra operations. Now, who has done that, adding extra operations in his RIA services? Who knew that you could do it? Okay, not too many. Basically, you can just expose your data set and your data model through WCF RIA services, but you can also add extra logic. So, for example, for our top sessions list, what we've done is created a get top sessions method, and it's just returning a collection of the top sessions that will be displayed on the top session screen. And you can just add it. It will generate in the Silverlight client. You will have to use it through SOAP in the ASP.NET MVT clients, but you can still use it and add your extra methods. So you're not really limited to just exposing your data model. So let's give a quick demo on that. Maybe I'll just start with showing you the application and what it looks like. So there's my mouse back. First of all, I'll give you a hint on the RIA service. So this is our production RIA service. If you copy the URL, you can actually, well, use our system through the service layer. And you can see it's RIA services, but we've exposed it as a SOAP endpoint. So what you can do is just click this one. You will get a nice WSDL file in this service, and you can just use it in any application. Just add a service reference in your console application or whichever client that you're planning, and you can use this. Okay, next thing we have is our back office. So I can just log in, and well, a lot of this was just generated. You can just get a list of the general feedback. So what do we have here? Can the upcoming favorite sessions be ordered on date and time, please? Well, we can do that. We'll try to do it after the sessions. There's some complaints about the expo boot being way too hot, so can be interesting if the weather's typical Belgian weather, but not today. But in this back, we're basically just using the data set features that WCF RIA services has to offer. So basically just creating, reading, updating, deleting directly on our database through RIA services, not using the extra functionality there. Next, we have our top sessions, but we don't have some listed there, but those will come probably later today after a few sessions and after a few votes are in. And then we also have our Twitter wall, which is built for a much higher resolution than this one, so we're only seeing part of it. But it's all communicating through WCF RIA services. So all the tweets are fetched through a custom call that's inside WCF RIA services and where you can connect with the service layer. So another thing we have here is our web application itself, but I will show you that later on during the talk. So let's have a look at some of the code. First of all, our general feedback model, as you can see, is basically our general feedback that we're displaying in the back office is just an eye collection, a collection view of feedback that's in our database. So what happens is, if I go to my database, there's a table named General Feedback. It's exposed to ADO.NET entity framework model, and RIA services have just been generated on top of that, and I can just bind on this collection from my view in Silverlight. So what I have is just my collection view containing the general feedback. Okay, next thing I have there is that my general feedback comes from the back office domain context, which is new mic, thanks. Okay, so is it on? Okay. Thanks for bringing the new mic. Sorry for the interruption. So we have the general feedback model in here, which is basically just a reference to my WCF RIA services context. And this has been generated. So I'm here in my back office client, which is a Silverlight application, and I can just go to this class, and you will see that it's... I have to go there, so to the back office, the main context. That is a sealed partial class, which is just inheriting the main context, but actually all this code has been generated. So I have created a server-side service layer in WCF RIA services, but this part has been generated based on that server-side context. So you can also have a look at the file name. It's .g.cs, so it's all generated from the service model that on the server side. Now, what's interesting there is that I also have, let me try if I can zoom it in. I have my data context there. So I can, through this domain context, I can go to my tenants, I can go to my users, I can go to my service, I can go to my, my event feedback, just like you would do it in a entity framework model. But as you can also see is that we have several methods in there, get tenant users query, get top commented sessions query, get top session item, which is just an added, really a new method that has been added at the server side and is now also exposed to the client side. So you're not limited to just exposing your entity sets. In fact, you can just remove them if you don't want it. And you can just create any method you want and have it exposed to either a RIA services Silverlight client, either an OData client, or either a SOAP client. And in fact, in the future, you will also have a JSON client. So if you want to use JavaScript on top of RIA services, so for example, a jQuery UI built on top of RIA services, you will be able to do that in the future. Actually, you can do it now. There's a preview available. Okay, what else do we have here? If we go to the feedback view model, which is in my Windows Phone 7 clients, you will see that, where is it? When I want to load my my survey questions, so for example, how was the speaker, how was the sessions, those are all questions stored in a database and built dynamically on my UI, you can see that all this stuff is basically just using a SOAP client. So if you have a look at the source code, you will see that I'm just using a feedback domain services SOAP client, which I've just created by adding a reference in my Windows Phone 7 application. So let me show you that one. I've just added a service reference to my feedback client authentication server and my domain service reference. So those are just SOAP services that I'm consuming on Windows Phone 7 and that I can also be consuming on ASP.NET MVC, for example. So just add a service reference, import it, and have a SOAP client available for you generated by Visual Studio. Now, one thing to notice there is that for every request we make, we first check if we're authenticated. So what we've done is, in order to not have too many complaints on the same thing by the same user in a database, we've created this system of logins and security codes, which you can find on your badge. And you have to log in, basically, and that's just to know that you can only vote once on a session and that you can only give feedback on a session once. We're not using that data to check who has voted what or who has given what comment. It's just to protect us from having too much spam in our database, basically. So we're checking if it's authenticated, and we're doing that on a local state container, which is just in memory for Silverlight. In isolated storage, we're checking if the user is authenticated. If it's not authenticated, we will just make a call to the authentication service, which will give us back an authentication cookie. And then we store that cookie in isolated storage on the Windows Phone 7 device and use that to authenticate to the other service by just basically setting the cookie container of our domain service where we want to get the questions to the cookie container we received from the authentication service. So we can actually pretty easily reuse that authentication cookie across different services on the same domain, of course. Okay. On the service layer, I will show you one more thing. we have the, where is it? The get survey questions, for example. So this is a different method that we've added on there where we can just say get our survey questions, and we return them by just exposing a new method instead of the complete data sets on the service. Okay, so I think I've scrolled back, by the way. Okay, no. So the backend, we have the top sessions list, and as you will see in the hallway, it's a pretty easy application. It's just a screen where you can see the top sessions. In fact, let me check if we already have some top sessions in there. Not yet, but they will come probably after these sessions. But we focused on design mainly there. Because it was something that would be displayed publicly in the hallways, in the boot area below, we wanted to focus on design. And well, we think it's pretty, and also the Windows Phone 7 application, it takes time to design your application right. So the Twitter application, same thing there. We just, it's pretty easy to just get a list of tweets from Twitter and use that in an application, but we also focused on design. And basically, let's make it a raffle. How many hours do you think that it costs to build this complete solution? So Windows Azure, ASP.NET MVC, Windows Phone 7, Silverlight clients. How many hours? Who says 500? Okay. More or less? Less? Okay. 200? Less? More? Less? Well, actually, it's 300. Which is pretty surprising. It's not that difficult to build this kind of application. But if you look at the exact points where we spent all this time, the biggest cost there is the design. So we spent something around 150, 160 hours on design, and the other time was just coding and meetings about how we're going to do something. So that being said, we think it looks pretty cool and looks pretty nice. But since we focused a lot on design, a lot of costs were made in there. Also, one thing we noticed is that you should really focus on designing the application for the device that you're using. So if you're building a website, don't make it look like a mobile something. If you're building a Windows Phone 7 application, just build it like a Windows Phone 7 application. Yesterday, we were sitting outside in the sun drinking beers, and one of the other speakers, Hadi Hariri, who has an interesting session on ASP.NET MVC 3 later today. He has an iPhone, but there's an application for creating PhotoSynth, Microsoft PhotoSynth application, on the iPhone. But he showed me the application, and it just had the look and feel of a Windows Phone 7 application. And that's interesting, because I'm a Windows Phone 7 user, and I can easily get around with that application. But if you're used to an iPhone, it's, pretty strange to see that on your device. You want the iPhone graphics, you want the iPhone look and feel and behavior of the application. So point that I'm trying to make is try to focus on building the right design for the right device and the right application. Okay, the Windows Phone 7 application. Again, we spend a lot of time there on basically creating the UI and user experience. I've had a lot of comments on Twitter that the application looks pretty nice, but that's only because we had quite some time sitting in the design aspect of the application. It's also using WCF RIA services again, so we're really reusing our service in different devices and different endpoints. We're using SOAP for that, and the authentication service works. We can connect to the domain service to get a list of the sessions, whatever you want to do. So RIA services, again, is a good candidate to use as your service layer. We also had some concerns about data usage, because not everyone has a data plan on their cell phone subscription. So we tried to ship the default list of sessions with the application, and it will only connect to the internet when it suspects there's a new session list, so it will check from time to time. And it will also only connect to the internet when actually giving feedback on a session or general remarks or whatever. So we try not to constantly open your connection. We just refresh every hour to check if there's new content available regarding session data. So the Windows Phone 7 application, actually, I forgot to boot that in my application. So let's do that. You can see there's a lot of projects in there. So first of all, what I'm going to do is, where is it? I have to find it. Okay, our host, which is my my service layer, actually, which is hosting our WCF RIA services and which is hosting our Twitter wall and top sessions and stuff like that. Shouldn't take too long. And you will see just a plain directory listing, and I have my service there. I can just give general feedback and whatever I want to do. So let's just boot that, okay? Now I'll show you the Windows Phone 7 application. By the way, who has installed it? Okay, a few, which is pretty good. There's Windows Phones outside, if you want to buy one. Okay, so let's start this one, and I want to show it on the Windows Phone 7 emulator. So let's start that one as well. And I suggest if you have the application or if you have a mobile device that can connect to the internet, just download it. Search for this session, and I have a suggestion, just rate 5 stars on speaker and session content, which seems reasonable, I guess. Okay, so there's the application on our Windows Phone 7 emulator. And, well, our session is in progress. It's not Kevin Dux, but it's me. I can also go to the agenda, so I can browse through the agenda, I can get information on a session. And I can also see which sessions are currently in progress or have been completed. And for example, our session is in there, and I have to log in once. So this is the security aspect, where we want everyone only to be able to give feedback once. I have a fantastic security measure in there, which is this one, which is on my badge as well. So I can now log in, and now is the only time it's actually making a data connection. It's getting the questions from my RIA services backend. It has authenticated with the credentials I provided. And I can now say, okay, I think this one is rated 5, this one is rated 5. No extra comments, and then submit it. So these are the only moments where I'm making a data connection to the application. And it's all just going to a SOAP service to RIA services. Now, unfortunately, I've done this on my development box, so it won't show up in the top sessions list, but then again, that would be cheating. Okay. So, I've talked a lot about phone, and I've talked a lot about Silverlight and RIA services, but how would you go about creating an application for the other devices? So, creating an iPhone application would have been an option, but that would mean we would also have to create an application for Nokia, for Android, and whatever. So we thought, since it's a Microsoft event, let's only build a Windows Phone 7 application and provide a mobile UI for the other devices. So we've created a mobile website for it using jQuery Mobile, and you will see that you can just give comments and rate questions and whatever you want to do on your any other mobile device as well. You can also use your web browser for it. And also, if you come with a Windows Phone 7 web browser, you will get a different view saying, there's an application in the marketplace, please download it. All of that has been built on top of one controller. So what we're doing is we've just created one set of controllers, basically providing the application logic, and then we plugged in different views on top of that. So one for web, one for mobile web, etc. So I can show you if I go to techdays.realdolmen.com. I mistyped that one. People always say don't do live coding, but I should probably also not do live typing in sessions as well. So this is my web front end. Now if I open my iPhone simulator, which will start as an iPad, but I will convert it to an iPhone. But Zoomit has the same shortcut, so I'm going to close that one as well. Okay, so there's our iPhone. I'm also going to turn it, and I'm going to the same URL, so techdays.realdolmen.com. And you will see the look and feel is completely different. I have a mobile device interface in there, and I have my web interface in my regular browser. So this is all served by the same application logic, the same controllers. Only the view is different. So I can log in here as well, and I'm going to cheat there. I've actually deployed my number one to production as well. I will remove it after the session. I'm going to do that in my mobile device as well. So you see, again, same controller, but a different view, targeted at the target device we're using. So for an iPhone, we have a nice mobile UI. For a web browser, we have a nice, well, typical website layout in there as well. Now, if you would go to this website with a Windows Phone 7 device, you would just get a link to the marketplace. Okay, so one controller and different views. I will show you in a minute how we have done this. We've also been using WCF RIA services in ASP.NET MVC 3 through the SOAP endpoint. Now, I know the title of this session actually promised something about OData, which is a very interesting feature. Now, unfortunately, if you expose OData from RIA services, you have a read-only situation. So you can get a list of questions, you can get a list of sessions, but you can't save anything, save feedback, save answers on questions in your database. So we have not used OData. Well, we have been exploring and then found out that it's read-only. So that's why it explains we have 300 hours of development. But we've been exploring. It works perfectly for read-only situations, but if you want to store something in your database, it doesn't work currently. But I'm pretty confident it will show up in one of the next updates. Also, there's some tuning required. If you add a service reference to RIA services in Windows Phone 7, it's a different service reference that is generated than you would have in ASP.NET MVC 3, for example. Also, the workings of the authentication service are a little bit different client-side if you're using MVC 3. So what we've done there is, for example, if you want to pass optional parameters to your service, in Windows Phone 7, you can just give it a null value or just don't give that value to the service. In MVC 3, you should also give a null value and say this property is not included. So you have two things that you should do and should remember when building the application. So we've created a wrapper for that, which does that stuff on the fly, so you don't have to develop that by hand. By the way, we're using RIA services through ASP.NET MVC, through Windows Phone 7, through Silverlight, but last week at Mix, there was an announcement that the next version of WCF RIA services will also be able to expose itself as a JSON service, and they even have a jQuery client for that. So if you're building a web application, you can just build a service layer in WCF RIA services and then plug jQuery on top of it to build your application completely client-side in your browser, but just use your browser and jQuery to communicate with your WCF RIA services service. So if you go to this URL, there's a preview there. It's still a bunch of files. It's not that clean yet, but it's just preview material to give you a glimpse of what is coming there. So I will give you a short demo. So first of all, my MVC application is a standard MVC application where I have a service reference, which is in there. So I, again, have a web reference to my service layer, my WCF RIA services service layer, just by using the SOAP endpoint. And this has been created. Next thing I have there is, since I told you about the optional parameters and we have some optional parameters in there, it's not pretty and not easy and not fun to work with. So what we've created is basically another service. So what we've done is we've created a partial class for our feedback domain service where we have added an insert method, a delete method, a submit changes method, etc. Because if you want to give data from your MVC application to your RIA services service layer, you have to build a change set. So really build a collection of all the changes in your application, inserts, updates, deletes, whatever you want to pass to your service, you have to create that change set manually. Now, because it's pretty cumbersome to create a change set and make sure it's disposed afterwards and make sure it's used afterwards, what we've done is we've just created these inserts, deletes, updates, etc. methods and a submit changes, which creates the change sets behind the curtains and doesn't expose it to the developer building the application. So what we have there is, for example, our change set is just an observable collection of change set entries. And then we have a method ensure change sets, which creates this change set, which is a tongue twister if you're not a native English speaker. And on submit changes, we just submitted changes based on the change set that we've created in the application and in the application code. Afterwards, we clean it, and we have a new change set available for subsequent calls. Okay, next thing we have there, because we have two services, we have the authentication service, we have our feedback domain service where we can get a list of entries, where we can get a list of the questions that should be answered by the client using the application. Because those are two different services, we decided on creating another wrapper for that and combining them in one. So we have a feedback service, which just has some basic methods like authenticate, add general feedback, get sessions, stuff like that. And under the hood, it's making use of RIA services. But it's exposed to our application in a much easier fashion and something which is much easier to use there. Okay, so jQuery Mobile. Oh, by the way, I forgot something. The view engine, which is pretty interesting. In our global ASAX, normally if you run ASP.NET MVP, you have the default view engine, which is WebForms or Razor. But you can create and plug in your own view engines. So what we've done is we've, in our global.ASAX, basically what we do is we clear the view engines collection. There, you see it. And then we add mobile view engines based on the Razor view engine, and which are dependent on a Lambda expression. By the way, this code comes from Scott Hanselman's blog, so credits to Scott. But what you can do here is just say, well, I have a condition, I have a precondition. For example, my browser should send a user agent, and the user agent string should be IE mobile 7. Which means that for any device giving this user agent, so by default Windows Phone 7, we will look for views inside the WP7 folder. Then again, if we have IE mobile users, which is the old Windows Phone users, their browser sucks, their default browser. So what we do there is we just give them the web interface because the mobile interface is even uglier than the default web interface. Next thing we do, if you have a Symbian device, we just give you layout. So you come to the website, techdays.realdomain.com with a Symbian device, you will get views from the mobile folder. And then we also have the general view engine for anything that falls out of these preconditions that we've entered in the application. So if you look at the views folder, you will see that I have a feedback folder, for example, but it also contains a mobile folder. So I have, should start zooming again. So I have my views folder. Under there is the feedback. And if I come with a regular browser, these views will be used. If I come there with a mobile browser, these views will be used, basically because the view engine told ASP.NET MVC to do it like this. So it's pretty flexible. You can just build your logic once, one controller, one action method, and you can reuse your views afterwards. Okay, what else do we have there? jQuery Mobile. Who knows of jQuery Mobile and has used it? Okay, a few. It's really a shame. You should try it. It's really interesting, and it's so damn easy to create a mobile web interface in Visual Studio. It's still in alpha stage. It's not even beta. It's just an ongoing alpha process of creating a mobile widget UI. But jQuery Mobile is basically just like jQuery UI. It offers you JavaScript and CSS classes to build a mobile web application. It's cross-platform, cross-device, so if you come to it with an iPhone or with an iPad or with a Windows Phone 7 device, your jQuery Mobile site will look slightly different because jQuery Mobile just does feature detection and checks if it supports this feature, then I can show this, else I can show that, and otherwise I don't show anything. It's based on HTML5, so everything you give it is it basically HTML5, and I will show you in a minute. The mobile views are really, really, really clean. And jQuery Mobile does the rest. Just because I added HTML5 tags in there, jQuery Mobile will know that, for example, if I add a header tag, it will show the black bar on top in my iPhone device. It's also touch optimized, and it will give you automatic transitions. So maybe I can just show you. I have the iPhone application here. If I go back, it should give me a loading indicator, and do a transition. So it will do transitions, I can go back, it will do other transitions, I can go back again. By the way, the emulator doesn't support anything, everything, but what I can do is just, it will, from a general list, it will create something like this, for example. So I just add an unordered list, and it will create a menu like this, in which I can click it, in which I will have transitions. It also has a navigation framework. So if I go to one page, it will automatically notice that I've moved to another page, and it will add a back button on top of the header bar. Also, if you want to add some buttons below in a footer bar, you can do that as well. If you want to add some extra images or whatever you want to do, you can just do it in here. So it's pretty interesting to use and pretty simple to use. There's also theming in there, and we've used, well, one of the default iPhone themes, but you can create your own, or if you want everything to be funky yellow or funky orange, you can just download it from jQuery Mobile and use it in your application. So it's pretty interesting to use. Now, I will give you a quick demo about how these views look. So if I go to my master page, well, I shouldn't say master page because it's MVC, so to my general layout, you'll see I also have a general web one, but I also have a mobile one, which is this one. And you will see that it's pretty easy to create. I just have well, some tags for including jQuery Mobile and including my main CSS. And then what I do is create a div with an HTML5 data role of page, and with a data team named A, can be B, can be C, whatever team you've downloaded from jQuery Mobile. Then I create another div with a data role of header, and this header div will be transformed into the nice header that you're seeing here. So this now in progress part is my header. Also, the bar, I can give it a data role of navbar, and all the links that I render in a nice list in there will show up as nice buttons as well in this header. Next, I have my content area, which I also give a data role of content, and in which my content will just show inside this jQuery Mobile theme. And then for the footer, I give it a data role of footer, and also a class of UI bar, just because I want to show some extra buttons there. But also, the emulator is not really showing anything there. But it should show basically a logout button on there. Now, what's interesting is if I go to the agenda, for example, you see this nice structure of DevTrack 1 on which I can click, and then I have the sessions, and then I go to a page describing the session. Well, basically, this step, this list, and this list is the same view. So if I go to this view, I have to enlarge my Visual Studio again. So if I go to feedback, mobile, to agenda, mobile index, you will see that in there I have a list with a data role of list view, and inside that list I have items, which are my days. So if I go back there, well, just have to click a session. So if I go here, this is my first list, just a regularly unordered list with a data role of list item. And inside that list item, I render a new list which contains all my session data, just a plain UL, unordered list, and this list is just one view, just by embedding, by combining two lists in one view, jQuery Mobile will make this automatic transitioning and paging possible. So it's really interesting to use, very easy to use. If you know HTML, you can basically build a mobile web application using jQuery Mobile. Okay, so the ASP.NET MVC 3 part, which is, as you may know, my favorite part. We've just been using the standard ASP.NET MVC project template, but we've also been using the new kits on the block, which are basically NuGet, and which are basically Mef and Mefcontrib. So NuGet, you've seen in the keynote by Scott Hanselman, it's a package management system in which you can just say, well, I want this package, install it, and get it. So I won't be demoing that one. But it's also very interesting because you can create your own feeds, and I'm pretty confident that tomorrow there will be a session about doing that. But if you have an in-house feed within your company, you can, for example, create a jQuery Mobile standard setup with layouts and templates distribute it to your company internal NuGet feed, and every developer has access to it and can start building a project based on that. So that's why it's really important. You have the public feed, but you can also create your own feeds with your own packages. Next, MevContrib is pretty interesting because we are using MEF. By the way, who knows MEF? Who has used it? Okay, a lot of you, which is pretty good. It's not an IOC container, but it works in a similar fashion. It just starts wiring up your application. So, for example, if you have your controller and you're expecting a feedback domain service in there, it will give you the feedback domain service. So I will show you in the code that we have created that, for example, in the MVC application, under services, we have a contract iFeedback service. So the complete ASP.NET MVC application works based on this interface. We say we have an iFeedback service, which has, should go back to Visual Studio there, which has a set credentials, which has an is authenticated method, which can retrieve a list of the sessions, which can retrieve or add general feedback to the database. And we're using this. So if I go to a controller, let's say my feedback controller, what I'm doing there is I'm just saying, well, I want this iFeedback service to be available, and I want to use this to, for example, get my list of sessions. So how does MVC know where to get this feedback service? Well, what we have is our feedback service implementation, where I have attributed this feedback service with an export, and it says, well, I'm exporting myself as an iFeedback service, and anyone who requests for an iFeedback service will get this implementation back, which is pretty interesting because MEF supports the concept of having a folder catalog where you can just drop in assemblies. And imagine you have no implementation of this feedback service in your application. You can just drop in an assembly in that bin folder and use it in your controllers or to have your application logic available. Now, how is this wired? Well, it's pretty easy. We've been using the MevContrib package from NuGet. So if I open my packages config, you will see that I'm using MevContrib and MevContrib.mvc3. And MevContrib MVC3 adds something to your application, which is some application start code, which is also available as a NuGet package. And this application start code basically comes out of the box with MevContrib MVC3. So if you install it, you don't have to touch this. You can touch it, but you don't have to. And what it does is really instructs ASP.NET MVC to use MEF for resolving containers, for example, or controllers for giving their implementation details at runtime. So what this class does, it's an application start. When your application starts, it executes, it instructs MVC3 to do a lot of wiring, and then you're basically free to do whatever you want based on MEF. So it's a nice addition to MEF. Okay, so Windows Azure and SQL Azure. Not really something fancy here. Because, like I said, we were in a bit of a hurry to get this application live and running, Windows Azure was basically a pretty obvious choice to use because Windows Azure is available always. You just have to swipe your credit card once. Well, not swipe, just enter the details. And you have an application running in Windows Azure. And because we have some other applications running in Windows Azure, we could just deploy the application to the same service in Windows Azure and have it available in like half an hour, which is pretty interesting. Also, because we had a distributed team of developers and a lot of developers working on this application, we wanted to have some staging environment available where they could just use the live services in a live production environment. Well, we deployed that to Azure as well, just running one instance, one server for each service. So it was pretty cheap to do, but still available through the internet and for every developer on our team to build the application. We've also done nothing fancy regarding tooling, so we just installed the Windows Azure tooling in Visual Studio. We've just used that to publish and deploy our application to SQL Azure. It's also pretty interesting to see that if you want to use SQL Azure, with WCF RIA services, for example, you can just reuse your entity framework data context. So you can just change your connection string and have SQL Azure as a database backend of your application. And it's also pretty cheap to host this application. To give you an idea, it has been running for about 3 weeks now, and we'll probably keep it on air for another week. And it's, well, I don't know the exact amount, but it's way less than 500 euros for like four servers at the moment. So it's pretty cheap. So I will give you a quick demo about the tooling. Basically, if you have an application, what you can do is you can go to the Windows Azure portal, create your package, package your application, and upload some sort of a zip file to the Windows Azure portal, and the Windows Azure portal will then create a virtual machine for you, install your application on there, and make sure that your application is running. Now, what you can also do is simply upload a management certificate, and what you can do there is just install that management certificate in Visual Studio as well, and then you can just say, well, the Windows Azure web frontend, I want to publish this thing. And what it will do is just publish it to my hosted service running on Azure. I can enable IntelliTrace, I can enable remote desktop on my box running in Windows Azure. I can enable web deploy, which is, by the way, a feature that we've used during development. It was available as a plugin, and with some extra configuration, you could use web deploy to deploy your application to Windows Azure as well. But it's now also available in the tooling out of the box. Now, don't use this for production, but if you're developing an application and just running on one server on Windows Azure, how many of you have tried deploying something to Windows Azure? Okay, a few. It takes time. It's like 20 minutes till half an hour if you do a lot of deployments similarly, before your application is basically running. So if you do a small change, want to test that on the Windows Azure environment, it takes a lot of time before you can actually use Windows Azure to do that. So what we've done is we've enabled this web deploy feature. And what will happen is an extra port will be added to your Windows Azure solution and will allow you to use web publish. And I hope that you have used web deploy before, but it's just right-clicking publish, saying yes, and it will deploy to Windows Azure. It will deploy the application on the same server that you have deployed initially, but you only have to deploy your application once, wait for 20 minutes, and then you can just do web deploy, web deploy, web deploy without waiting too long. It's literally 30 seconds instead of 20 minutes, which is pretty long if you're working on Friday and hoping for a weekend of nice weather. You want to be able to use something like web deploy to be quicker in development. Now, don't use this for production. Why? Because, as you may know, Windows Azure is stateless. So it can happen any time that your virtual machine is rebooted and loses all its data if you haven't stored it elsewhere on a safe location. So if you're using web deploy, what you're doing is just overwriting your application on that Windows Azure instance. But this means that if your server is rebooted or reimaged, you may be in a situation that your updated application has been gone. So don't use this for production, only use it for development, but really, really speeds up development if you're working with Windows Azure. So I can now just click OK and it will go publish. Now I'm not going to do that because otherwise my development connection strings will be live on the internet, but you get the picture. Now I also told you that you could use SQL Azure for, well, basically as a database. So what we have there is my... use my, what's it called again, feedback domain context. So this is my, okay, it's in the service layer application. Let me find that one. Shouldn't have closed it. So I just have my live feedback model, which is basically just an entity framework model that I'm using. And right before we deploy, we just change the connection string to SQL Azure, and that's it. Now there's a small catch there. SQL Azure has this feature called throttling, which is pretty nice because basically when you're hammering SQL Azure, it will just close your connections and won't allow you to connect for another 1 second or 2 seconds or up to 10 seconds. So what can happen is if you all vote a session to the top list and everyone votes at the same time, we will get a lot of SQL Azure connections coming from our Windows Azure deployment to SQL Azure. And basically because throttling can happen and SQL Azure can, at that moment, refuse connections, you will get an ugly error screen. Now, we also don't want to have you looking at an ugly error screen. We want you to post your feedback and use the service. So what we've done is we've created this simple thing, which is also recommended by Microsoft, to basically overcome throttling. We have, basically because every entity framework data context is partial, we have created another partial class with the same name, live feedback entities. And when a data context is created, we actually try to connect to SQL Azure. So you see that we're using the connection string. We are opening the same connection entity framework we'd use. We just do some strange declare an integer on SQL Azure. Why? Because it will only connect, well, entity framework will only connect to my SQL Azure database when I issue a statement. So I issue some dummy statement to check if I can connect. Now, if this fails, I close the connection, retry. So you can see that I just sleep for a few seconds or a few milliseconds, add a retry integer, and I just sleep for 1 second, for example. Next time I connect and I can't connect, I sleep for 2 seconds. Next time I connect and I can't connect, I sleep for 3 seconds, up to a certain maximum, but we'll try connecting according to the laws dictated by SQL Azure. And eventually it will get in. Now, of course, it just doesn't keep increasing. When we're at a maximum, we will throw an exception and we'll give you an error page. But usually you won't get there, you won't see the error page, because it will connect eventually during this process. So, that being said, I want you to remember some things. First of all, design takes time. We think our application is pretty beautiful and pretty nice and easy to use, but it takes time to do. But if you take the time, you will be rewarded by your customers for doing it. WCF RIA services is basically a pretty interesting technology because it gives you a service layer, which every WCF service does as well. But it also allows you to do rapid application development. So really generate your service, add some methods, and bam, there's your service layer available. So you can do rapid application development, and you can use it from any technology. It works best with Silverlight at this moment, but you can just use a SOAP or the OData endpoint if you're doing read-only stuff on WCF RIA services. I'm waiting for OData write support because that would be really clean. Like now we had to write a wrapper to hide the optional parameters, but basically if you use OData, you don't have to do that. You just deal with the entities like you would deal with entity framework, for example. Also interesting, it's not on this slide, is the support for jQuery that's coming. So you can just write a client-side application in jQuery and use WCF RIA services to create your service layer and have a jQuery front-end on top of that. jQuery Mobile, although it's alpha, it's a pretty pleasant surprise to work with. Basically, we had two teams working on this application, one team for the service layer and the Silverlight application, and one team for the MVC application and the mobile web application. The MVC parts of the team didn't know about mobile. They just knew HTML and MVC3. And they just started working with jQuery Mobile, and in like 10 minutes, they had a pretty nice to work with results as a mobile application. MVC3 is very extensible, so you can plug in MEF, you can plug in NuGet packages. Like Scott also showed you, a lot of packages available for MVC3 and for other technologies. And Windows Azure, we didn't really choose it because of its technical capabilities, well, also. But the main reason there was to have some cheap temporary hosting that would not cost us too much, yet still give the amount of flexibility we needed. We didn't know, should we have one or two servers, or maybe we should have five, so we have some monitoring on there to scale out if needed. So if you want to stay up to date, there's a nice TechNet desktop gadget which is available. So you can download that and get all the content you want from TechNet. TechDays 2011 on demand. This session and all the other sessions will be available after the event on Channel 9. And you can use them on your Windows Phone 7 device or your Zoom or your whatever iPod device that you're using as a podcast. So if you go running or something, you can have the sessions during that activity. Some resources related to Silverlight. So best way to start is just go to silverlight.net and silverlight.net getting started. ASP.NET MVC, same thing, just go to the website. There's lots of tutorials there, lots of video sessions, lots of examples. jQuery, basically same thing, just go to their website. They have a lot of tutorials available. Actually, jQuery Mobile has a pretty nice website because their website has been built, well, at least their documentation part, has been built in jQuery Mobile and is demonstrating all their capabilities. So if you're trying to achieve something in your application that you're building with jQuery Mobile, just browse through the docs and you will find an example in use on the internet that's doing that same thing that you're trying to achieve. And then Windows Azure, of course, you can get a subscription on Azure.com, you can get the tools at Azure.com, and I know there's a free trial available as well. So with that, if you have a mobile device, feel free to vote. techdays.redolman.com. We have some suggested ratings and suggested free text there that you can use, but you're not obliged to use this one, of course. So thank you for being here. It was a bit of a shame Kevin couldn't make it, but still, get better, Kevin. Thanks.